is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud here. Three big stories on the show today. Well, terrorism again in New York City. We're going to talk about that at the top of the show here. And America's culture war. We have a really robust conversation coming on that topic. And also, we've got the whole indictment coming down, the Manafort Gates and the whole indictment program. And we're going to get into that a little bit. And let's start at the top of the show here. I'd like you to meet Dr. James Mitchell. And you know him. He's served as an interrogator for the CIA. He was involved in the development of the CIA's enhanced interrogation program. And actually, he interrogated 14 of the most senior so-called high-value detainees in U.S. custody, which I find quite interesting. Dr. Mitchell served 22 years in the U.S. Air Force and retired as a lieutenant colonel. He is the go-to person the media relies on when terrorism shows its ugly head. We'll start right here, and I want to ask you, Dr. Mitchell, here to start with, could we have prevented the terror attack last week in New York City? Was this preventable?
Not in the near term. You know, the problem with it is that, as Khalid Sheikh Mohammed told me one time, the guy behind 9/11, what he said is, we're going to immigrate to your country. We're going to wrap ourselves in your civil liberties. We're going to feed ourselves with your social welfare system. And then when the time is right, we're going to rise up and attack from within. Our biggest problem, I think, is that we're working on the wrong end of the problem. Hmm. You know, we, instead of trying to stop it at the source, we try to catch these guys when they're radicalized and running around after the fact. What we should be doing is attacking the ideology and not importing people who are susceptible to it.
Yeah.
One of the interesting things that some of the terrorists that were in CIA custody told me was that the mere exposure to their Wahhabi religion predispose them to become radicalized and take up arms against the United States and become jihadists. They weren't always that way. And so what happens is, when you bring a person in like the bomber and guy who drove those cars into the people in New York recently, he already has all of the bad ideas in his head to make him a terrorist. And really, the bulk of the radicalization is done. So we need to attack the ideology and shore up our borders and quit bringing people in, especially quit importing the ideology itself, the radical ideology, which means that it's going to take us about 20 years if we start doing that now. Because we have whole generations of people who are already radicalized.
Right. And the big point you just say is the word if, that small little word if, Dr. Mitchell, you know, that is the if. We have two political conversations going on in what you're speaking about right now. When you take a look at what happened in New York City, you take a look at what happened at the Orlando nightclub and San Bernardino and many others for that matter here. The argument that is argued back is that, hey, there are other people who create terror type incidents. It's not just that this group of collective radicalized jihad, it's not just this. There are others. And it's pointed out that, you know, quite a bit, they start to go into the Oklahoma, and there's a whole series of those as well. Which, of course, then you get into mental health, you get into all kinds of other problems that, you know, deranged people exist in every species. I've always said that. But when you take a look at New York City, Orlando, San Bernardino, what is the commonality? I mean, I like where you start with this, getting down to the education factor of the root cause. But what does all of these have in common? If you're going to connect the dots, as a terrorism expert, what do you look at when you look at all of these?
The fact is, Islam, as it's practiced by these folks, is not a religion of peace. It wasn't a religion of peace 1,400 years ago, and it's not a religion of peace now. And what we do is we perpetuate this by refusing to acknowledge it. You know, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the guy behind 9/11 again, told me that you may not be in a religious war with me, but I am in a religious war with you, and I will eventually defeat you because you will not acknowledge that. And so that the notion that they have been commanded by their God in that version of Islam to convert, subjugate, enslave, or slaughter everyone on the planet. Those ideas are already planted before they come into our country. And then the only real issue, if you look at the difference between a Salafist who wants to use violence and a Wahhabist, is who gets the call for you to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, the Wahhabists believe, if you go right back to the Wahhab, the scholar that started that branch of that religion, he says it has to be the caliph, Allah's viceroy on earth. But the Salafists say Allah has already called for that. We don't need a human being to tell us what our God has instructed us to do. So all of those bad ideas are out there fomenting, and ISIS takes advantage of that to radicalize people in the state.
Which is why often it's referred to as a war of psychology. It's a psychological war. Let's bring on here and have a bigger conversation. Let me bring on Colonel Jim Warshak. And you know Colonel Warshak on the platform. He's retired from the United States Air Force, serving nearly 30 years as a career senior intelligence and political military affairs officer and special mission intelligence officer. He served as deputy director for Intelligence U.S. Central Command, U.S. CENTCOM, during the peak years of the war in Afghanistan, Iraq, and the global war on terrorism. Also worked on the White House National Security Council. Good to have Colonel Warshak and Dr. Mitchell here with us. Colonel Warshak, let's pick it up. I like what, here's what's interesting to me, where Dr. Mitchell just went and opened up with, okay? My guess is, if we could just understand what he just said, if we could get the country to wrap its arms around how he just opened up the dialogue, I think then we would have maybe a chance, back to what he said, 20 years from now. If we get started now, maybe in 20 years we can be in front of this thing and not coming from behind. There's a whole psychological aspect to this that a lot of people are not really understanding. I think one of the big questions that, I mean, it's a simple question, but it's a big question, Colonel Warshak, is I don't think a lot of people understand that we are at war. I mean, are we at war? And do we classify an act of terrorism as an act of war?
The main thing that we need to look at, Malcolm, is why and how do we perceive an act of war from the standpoint of our government and from the standpoint of the people. And if the government does not portray the current situation as it really is, we're going to have a hard time as American citizens to understand where we are and what our position is. I think the biggest obstacle that we're dealing with, and President Trump raised that issue the other day following this attack, is we have let political correctness get in the way of our fight against radical Islam. That's really been the biggest obstacle, is defining that. We have to, first and foremost, as Dr. Mitchell said, go after the ideology. And until we do that, we are going to perpetually be involved in these kind of situations.
It's very challenging when they are teaching their 2, 3, 4, and 8-year-olds to hate people, to hate the infidel, to hate God-loving people. It's very, very difficult to get. That's a mindset, as you've already said, Dr. Mitchell. It's a big, big mindset. Here's the thing. Let's bring it back to New York City for just a moment here. Here's what another point I don't really understand. If we are at war with Islamic terrorism, if we can really say that, then why do we give these kinds of killers that are over here that are radicalized, and you know how they got here or what's happened, diversity visas or born here or whatever, they're still being radicalized. They're still, the internet is a big tool for these cats. Why is it that we give these killers their Miranda rights? And, and I'm wondering, both of your views, should these criminals be treated as enemy combatants, or are we right to give them their Miranda rights? Dr. Mitchell, what do you think on that?
Well, I think they should be treated as unlawful enemy combatants. You know, there's lots of kinds of enemy combatants. Wear a uniform, fight for a state, and you're one of our enemy combatants if your state's an enemy of ours. Mm-hmm. These folks are unlawful enemy combatants and aren't even allowed rights under the Geneva Convention unless we choose to provide those, which we have chose to do. So in my view, these kinds of terror attacks, you know, this guy, they toss around the word lone wolf, but, you know, the data that's come out right since his attack is that he's really not a lone wolf, and he wouldn't have been anyway, because We are in the middle of a worldwide insurgency where they're trying to impose Sharia on the entire world. And what they are trying to do is target our minds so that we're afraid to oppose them. And when we Mirandize them and give them lawyers who prevent you from being able to ask follow-up questions that would allow you to get actionable intelligence so that you could prevent the next attack. There's no doubt that he did what he did. The question is, what's the network? You know, who else is out there who are planning similar kinds of things? And to some extent, it's the difference between a law enforcement approach and a war-focused intelligence gathering approach. Mm-hmm. They're interested in getting a confession that'll hold up in a court of law, whereas most intel people, if they're following the intel requirements for targeters, would want to know what else is out there and have a specific series of questions.
Well, listen, Dr. Mitchell, I've always thought the term lone wolf was a ridiculous term to use based on everything you said. That's totally where I'm at on that, because what does that term really mean, lone wolf, right? I mean, come on. And clearly, I think that's a term many media heads are using out there, that's their safety net. So they put that out there quickly to sort of get the, think about it, psychologically, it's designed to get the public to rest. Like, oh, it's okay, it's all right. This was just like a one-off. It may not happen again even. It's okay, it's a lone wolf. What the hell is a lone wolf? You think about that. I mean, there's a whole operation and a mindset behind him and the whole concept of radicalization. So until we can come to the table and understand that these people are radicalized and they've been that way from birth and they do outrageous things that we wouldn't even consider to be humane in this country. I'll give you both an example real quickly here. There's a young lady I just interviewed on my daily talk show. She was born in Baghdad, Tamar El-Bayati, her name is, and her husband is, long story short, real quickly, he's stuck in Dubai. She transitioned from Islam to Christianity, so we know what that means, and she's an apostate, and her family has threatened to kill her. They're trying to find her. She's here in the United States and has a daughter that's born in America here. Can't get the husband here because they won't approve the visa. He's a Christian. He was born a Christian. He's working in Dubai. But the point is, it gets very political and very messy. I just did a show on this to showcase this, Separated on Two Continents, it's called, by political red tape. But it gives you the idea of the extremeness, Colonel Warshak, about being an apostate and about how radicalized this whole concept is and religion is when you, because you make a personal decision to change your religion, that you are subject to death. I mean, that sounds a bit extreme, doesn't it?
Well, it's certainly extreme to most of us, most Americans, most people in the world, but it's not considered extreme in Islam, in radical Islam, because that is one of the forbidden aspects of the religion, and to hate all religions.
I want to ask you, let me move along a little bit quickly here, some of the real key points to get in here. And I want to talk about the radicalization a moment here. Many of these individuals, again, as you said, Dr. Mitchell, become radicalized. This guy supposedly was radicalized online while living in the U.S., we understand. How big of a problem do you think the internet is, and what can we do about it as a country, Dr. Mitchell?
Well, I mean, we are very, we make great effort to try to control child pornography. If they employed some of the same strategies for controlling that, to controlling the sort of Islamist ideology that calls for the slaughter of Jews and Christians and so forth, then something could be done about it. But that's not likely to be done. You know, they aren't likely to do that. This is part of our problem. And again, I hate to keep going back to these guys, but in 2005, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed told me, your religious freedom and your tolerance is a weakness that God has put in your head so that we can defeat you. Political correctness acts like a cloaking device. What he said was, it's not against the law for our religion to come into your country. It's not against the law for us to set up a network of friends who will support us when we need it. It's not against the law to plan to carry out activities together. And by the time you notice that we have some, you know, that we're going to do an operation, then it's frequently too late. And I don't think we should give up our religious freedoms, but we shouldn't be blinded to that either.
Do we need tighter laws to catch these people in the act? Now, what do I mean by that? What I mean is that often when one of these incidents happen, for instance, New York City, Orlando, San Bernardino, I can almost all of them, I can think of my mind, when they go and they interview the people afterward, the spouse, the friend, the acquaintances, the neighbor, the work associates, it's always like, yeah, you know, that dude seemed a little strange to me. Yeah, no, he said some pretty crazy things. Yeah, no, he said he hated America. He said this, he said that. And then you look at a social media account normally, and it's just full of rubbish and hateful stuff. Where's that fine line? I mean, if we haven't caught them when they're kids and we haven't educated, and these people already radicalized that are here, and we're talking, we're 20 years out, and we're going to turn that table, it's always like, I should have, I could have. Why didn't I say something? I don't know why I didn't say something. I didn't think Jerry was going to blow the place up, but he did.
Yeah, it's a kind of a double-edged sword. You have to be careful that you don't get involved in confirmation bias, because we can always look back at some friend who did something and think, well, that was kind of odd. Teaching kids in school are important. You can't raise a kid and tell him that everything that's wrong with the world is because of America, and then at 21 expect that kid to be anything other than disenchanted with us. We have to teach American values. We have to press assimilation. But we also have to turn off the spigot of that radical Islam. And that means don't let them in, throw them out, put them in jail. But we're playing whack-a-mole at the wrong end of the radicalization pipeline.
Wow. You know, there's a lot to take from this conversation. I have to tell you, friends out there, you listen to Dr. James Mitchell, you listen to Colonel Jim Warshak, and, you know, I've got to say this. These are two patriots who really get, I believe, the core of the problem. And I'll tell you what, if you rewind this later on and you listen back to this segment in this interview, I'll give you this. We just solved, I believe, some of the real problems that we're having in this country right now in these past few minutes. And if we took action at the level of what we're talking about and understood the core problem, I guarantee you this, my friends, we'd have a different country just ahead, and maybe we can prevent the next New York City, the next Orlando, the next San Bernardino, the next crisis that we know is going to happen somewhere. We just don't know where, and we just hope like hell it's not our family that's there, don't we now? Let the silent voices be heard. It's the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutloud.com. For a wide spectrum of programming, from world and political news, societal and cultural stories, law enforcement, our military heroes, and much more. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
Well, in our next segment, friends, we're calling this America's Culture War. And we're speaking of a lot of things that fit that description. One is the NFL players and the kneeling that's been happening at all the games. And in fact, if you notice in the World Series, there was a lot of gleeful baseball fans that were happy that they took the higher road, and they didn't have those same problems in baseball. And that's been an ongoing feud in sports, actually. In addition, a lot of the statues are coming down. A lot of the Robert E. Lees and the political statues are coming down. George Washington, and I don't think anybody's sacred anymore when it comes to trying to, I don't know what the real goal is, whether it's to replace history or to rewrite it. Kind of hard to rewrite it at this moment. I mean, we can kind of rewrite the future, maybe, as we get our program together, but kind of hard to, you know, fix history that happened 50, 100 years ago, that's for sure. So America's Culture War, I want to bring on here Dr. Ron Martinelli joins us. And Dr. Ron Martinelli is a forensic criminologist and a police expert and somebody who is an expert on America Out Loud. And we always love his opinion. And he wrote a very fascinating column and article on America Out Loud, which actually was rave reviews. I was just telling him. I heard comments like best written article I've read in a long time. And it's called America's Culture War. You'll find it right there on America Out Loud on Dr. Ron Martinelli's page there. So look that up. And also the outstanding Barbara McGee joins us. And Barbara is herself a radio host. And she was a host on a show on America Out Loud and has a new show called L.A. Miracle Cure. And she is a political commentator and activist, and you don't want to cross Barbara too much. I'll tell you, she'll come right after you here. So so good to have you both with us here. I want to start and talk about the kneeling. You know, it's one of these things that, as it's been happening here, I think a lot of us were waiting week to week to see what was going to happen next. If, you know, Roger Goodell was going to make a stand at some point, or if he was going to say, okay, this is, I mean, because it's kind of written in there that you're not supposed to do, you're supposed to honor the flag and stand for the flag. I mean, it is written in there, but they're not enforcing the policy. And it really comes back to the enforcement of that policy. This all started with Colin Kaepernick, as we all know, and it had to do with social injustice and many of these things. I want to start here. Dr. Ron, I want to start with you, please, and talk about, in your piece, you talk about kind of losing sight of some of those social injustices. What do you think the kneeling is about right now today? What it's kind of lost the polish of the social injustice conversation, or do you think that's still the case?
Well, I think the players themselves are defining what they believe social injustice is, and I think just based on what they say, and that's the only thing you can go with, they feel that there's systemic racism, they feel that there's systemic police brutality, and injustices in the criminal justice system, and so that's what they appear to be protesting about while they're kneeling.
But that was how it started. But now some people are saying it's actually against the president, President Trump. You don't think that's the case?
Well, you know, some members of the NFL have mentioned President Trump, and others haven't. I'm seeing actually that far more people are talking about, you know, the other causes that I just mentioned a moment ago. But, you know, but the problem is the context and their knowledge of these issues, which is extremely limited. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, of course, I've written about Colin Kaepernick. You know, his knowledge of social injustice is extremely limited. And as a matter of fact, I don't know anything that he's ever said where he experienced social injustice.
Okay. And I'd like to make a comment on this, because first off, I appreciate your experience. But I do want you to understand that Colin Kaepernick, let's talk about it. Okay, his mother's white. So really, for him to be the sole person to take a knee, let's talk about just what taking a knee is. It has nothing to do with the flag. That is has nothing to do with being anti-establishment of America. No, what it has to do with is a man down on the field. That's really what it's about. It's about understanding that there's some urgency, there is some injury, there is something catastrophic happening, and I'm going to take this time to kneel to pray in respect for the positive outcome. That's really
no, Barbara, that's never been discussed by Mr.
Wow.
Kaepernick. I you're really reaching there.
I've never heard that. Well, hold on, folks. I've never heard, Barbara, hold on, Barbara. I've never heard that description before, Barbara. I've never heard that.
Okay, hold on.
Including from Mr. Kaepernick.
But Hold on. When you play football, when there's an injury and the man cannot get up and officiate himself off the field, then everyone on the field takes a knee in respect and prayer for him to get up.
Okay, so Barbara, so who is stuck on the field? Let's break this down, please. Who is stuck on the field? So you're saying, I mean, you're trying to tie that to, I assume, the social injustice that people are down. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly what it's all about. Okay. It's about the fact, what I think people have forgotten here is that the football industry itself is 75% black. First off, that's number one. And number two, there is not one football owner in the whole auspices of football. So there's a very uneven playing field just in the fact that...
You're saying, Barbara, there's not a black... None of the owners are black, you're saying.
Absolutely.
So Barbara, I want let me ask you something. Could you almost look and consider that like the plantation?
Well, unfortunately, before Curt Flood, who played baseball, took a stand and said, who's from Oakland? I'm from Oakland. Who took a stand and said, hey, you know what? You can't just arbitrarily trade me when you want to. He's the one that instituted and sacrificed his career to be a free agent and control his own destiny.
All right, Barbara, hold on. There are two conversations here. There's the point of if there is or isn't social injustice. Let's put that on the side a moment. I don't want to debate that this second. But there's the where is social justice happening and how do we solve that problem and what do we do to make it better? And then there's the how do we protest this? When and where should we protest this? Let's talk about that first and foremost, because the social injustice conversation is a very big and fluid conversation that it's perception. Everybody has a different perception. And I know Dr. Ron, who has studied this, has a lot to say about the social injustice part of it. And as a police expert, well, let me finish saying here, Barbara, hold on. This point of what I'm saying is the point of why people are upset here, Barbara McGee. Why people are upset is because not that if there is or isn't social injustice specifically to the point of them being disrespectful to the cause. It's to the point of the fact that many have taken it as they are dishonoring this nation. They are dishonoring our military and law enforcement. I mean, let's call it what it is, Barbara. That's a fact.
No, that is where we have to be careful, because we all are Americans. And we have to be careful when we allow the media to twist this into something it isn't. See, it's very convenient for Donald Trump and for various people in the news media to use this and say this is anti-America. Let me tell you something. It's nothing more when you take a time to take a prayer for the man down in the streets. You use your forum that you've worked all your life to do to play professional football. This is an honor. And when you recognize that at this point in your life, you have an opportunity to point the finger at the person like Sandra Bland, who can no longer speak for herself because she's dead, because she was in police custody. Let's just look at this. Okay. There were 492 police killings in 2016, last year. 250 of those were black killings. We only make up 14% of this population. How could it be so uneven? Okay. We're not having a problem with the police acting and doing what they need to do to keep us all safe. We have a problem with unarmed black people being killed when they're interfacing within law enforcement.
Okay.
That's the problem.
All right, Barbara, let's get Dr. Ron to respond now, please.
Well, so many issues to respond to. First of all, let's take the first issue of taking a knee. Okay, these are employees, okay? They're not free agents when they step on the field. They're employees, and they have business agents that negotiate contracts. And in the contracts are the rules and regulations of the NFL and the owner's expectations. And so that player, when he comes and he signs a contract to play football for whatever franchise he's playing for, he and his business owner have gone over thoroughly that contract, and they know exactly what the contractual obligations are, one of which is that you don't take a knee during our national anthem. Okay, that's number one. So it is, absolutely, Barbara. And if you knew anything about business and business contracts, and I'm a businessman, I know exactly what those contractual obligations are.
Roger,
Barbara, okay, you let me know if this is going to be your forum, and then I'll be quiet, and that'll be the end of the show for me. So you make up your mind right now. Are you going to show me respect, and are you going to let – I didn't say a word while you were talking.
Okay, go ahead.
So let's just draw a line in the sand right now. What do you want to do?
Have your say. Go ahead.
Okay. Then if I'm going to have my say, then I'll expect you to be patient, with all due respect. Employment law in the state of California favors the owners, at least. And throughout the United States, it favors the owners. That's number one. So they're in violation of a business contract, and they're all adults. And the business contract has been fully negotiated. Enough said. Number two, it's important to point out, when these players decide to take a knee, they don't take a knee off duty, off the field, when they have every right to express their First Amendment rights of freedom of speech. Okay, they don't do it then. They do it on the field during the playing of the national anthem. They don't know what they're speaking about. Okay, so you have multi-million dollar players that have had every single opportunity as they grew up and got into sports. They have a singular talent, which is playing football. And they've gone through college on full rides, okay, to play football. And then, because of a blessing from God, they're able to take that talent and transfer that talent into a professional venue where they're making multi-million dollars of money. And they get every single opportunity. And as you said, 75% of the players out there are black. Okay. So I don't want to hear anything about social injustice to those people that are in the upper 1% of the elite multimillionaires in this country, where we don't have false narratives unless people like yourself or the mainstream media make them up, just like hands up, don't shoot. Never happened. Okay, investigated by four different agencies, including the United States Department of Justice, FBI. Never happened. And this is what part of the culture war is. You people that are in the media continue, and some of these activists keep trying to forward these false impressions about law enforcement. And I work all sides.
Okay.
There are more blacks killed by blacks in self-defense shootings than police officers who kill blacks.
Okay, well,
number
let's
one,
talk about
number
how many
one,
blacks kill whites. This is not. The
you know,
issue.
If you want to talk case by case, believe me. If you want to talk case by case, I'm your Huckleberry. You go ahead.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you, Doctor. Appreciate you. And so, what we're looking at here are people who are just like me and you that actually use their platform, this moment, to take a knee to pray, to say that our country is suffering. And it is. And you know what? It's very easy to say that the United States Justice Department, it's very easy to say that, you've worked on various organizations that are all of law enforcement to investigate. That's okay. That's all great.
All right.
Well and good. But let me tell you, here's the problem. The problem is that we just recently have cameras. These cameras don't lie. And this is why people, black, brown, white, whatever, Americans, have seen footage of some of these shootings. And that's the problem.
Okay.
So not everyone feels as you
Barbara,
feel.
Barbara, I want to interject here because you're both going down a road. I want to bring it back to something, please. You're going down the road of where I didn't really want to go, which is talking about really the whether they're justified or unjustified. We only have so much time here. Here's the point, Barbara, that we're missing here that I really am looking for your response with, as Dr. Ron Martinelli put it out there. First of all, I find when we come to a conversation like this with two schools of thought, we often talk over each other and not with each other to have a proper dialogue. So I want to have a proper dialogue, and I want to ask you this, Barbara. You say that they have a right to kneel. You say that they're not disrespecting the country. They're not disrespecting the national anthem or the flag or the president or any of that. I don't know if that's really the case. And here's the thing. If I'm a fan, now we notice the stadiums are emptying out. People are turning it off. Like, I don't watch football anymore because I personally find it highly disrespectful what's going on, period. And I would not spend my money. What fan wants to spend $500, $600, $800, $1,000 for tickets and then to have that happen when the anthem is playing? So here's the point I want to make, Barbara. Social injustice, who's shooting who, let's put that aside a moment. If there are real social injustices happening and the football players believe that, why don't they take some action outside of when the anthem is played? Why don't we see some of these people out on the streets doing the things that they need to do or in the media making a movement?
Why is
I don't see that happening.
Wait a minute. Why is it?
You don't see the NFL in mass protesting in Chicago with all the thousands of deaths that they have there, which are black on black crime. You don't see that.
Why is it when black people stand up for black people, there's a problem? That's what I don't understand.
Well, there's not a problem.
This is a problem.
It's more than that, Barbara. Barbara, the problem is that they're doing it on my dime. If I'm a fan and I spent X amount for a ticket, I have a right to get what I want. And if I don't get what I want, I'm not coming back. And that's what's happening right now to the National Football
League.
Well,
you know what I say? This is what I say to you. Get your popcorn and take your seat when the first half starts. Don't wait for the anthem. Because the problem is, why can't we turn this around and look at better policing policies?
Let's assume social injustice is happening. Got it. Let's assume that, that's a conversation that
okay,
I'm giving you.
Let me just say this. The last time I was stopped by the police, I had to have my OnStar witness my policing. Okay, so that's just driving while black.
Barbara, if that is happening.
It's happening.
All right, so let's stop there a minute. It's happening. I've given you that. Then why isn't something done about it? Why are the football players not taking the rest of their life to fix the problem? Why is it they choose the moments we are honoring our country, our heroes? Why did they take that moment to be disrespectful, Barbara? What's the answer to that?
Well, did we go back to the fact that when there's a man down, whether he's on the field or in the streets, when there is a critical injury happening, mm-hmm. that's when you take a knee in prayer.
But nobody's down on that field, right? Hold on. Nobody is down on the field right at that moment, Barbara. The game hasn't even started. Stop. You're bringing it back to the street and something that happened. Well, hold on. There's a bigger problem here. And that is that they are choosing, and that's why many Americans, most Americans, black and white, believe there's an incredible amount of disrespect that has happened at the moment. And Barbara, here's the bigger thing. The NFL is a place of business. Number one, if you did that on your job, anytime you wanted, got down on your knees to be disrespectful or to protest, whatever it is you want to protest, I don't care what it is. You want to protest that eggs are coming from chickens and you're going to get on your knees. Do you know that company can fire you?
There is no disrespect to the country. There is no disrespect to the flag. The disrespect is the fact that the media says it's disrespectful.
Well,
Goodell has never said that it is the contract that you have to pledge of allegiance.
Let me just sum it up this way. It is a policy. It is in their policy manuals that they are supposed to stand and put their hand on their heart and be. It is in there, Barbara. Absolutely, 100%. It's in there. It's in there on all the major sports. Just the NFL has chosen to look the other way. And the NFL has chosen to look the other way. And the NFL, you know what, Barbara? They have a right to do that. Absolutely, 100%. And the football players have a right to continue to be disrespectful, as many Americans believe they are being. They have a right to do that as well. And you know what else, Barbara? People have a right not to go to the games and spend money. And as the stadiums continue to empty, and as they continue to be in direct opposition to the American public, you're going to find that football, the reputation of the National Football League has been forever tarnished. The decline of a sport that was once in its glorious days, and I don't know if we'll ever get back there in our lifetime. And it's all back to that one story of Colin Kaepernick and where it started, and this argument of, is it really social injustice? Not that social injustice is happening or not. We understand everyone has a perception of that. We got that. But there's a place and time for everything. And is that the place and time? That's the question you need to ask yourself today. As a patriotic American myself, I personally find it offensive. And that is my out loud truth today.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. Well, the president came into office with gray clouds, and a storm was brewing right from the beginning, and you know, it has not let up yet. It is still happening, and you know, it's funny because when this all happened and he took office, I was wondering, with all of the controversies and the scandals that were sort of around this election, where this would take off, and boy, has it taken off. And so joining us on the panel discussion today, George McClellan is here. He's a conservative political commentator, a weekly columnist. His professional career spans 43 years in law enforcement and the U.S. Naval Investigative Service, which has all given him a worldview of what really ails us. Yeah. And Shauna Vercher is here. She's a leading political media strategist, author, activist, lecturer. She's a co-founder and president of Democracy Legacy Network. It's a political media network, and she's a senior partner at Second Line Consulting. Ava Armstrong also rounds out the panel. She's a political commentator, radio personality. Ava's an author who writes about, well, sometimes we call it the everyday people, the forgotten folks, the veterans, police officers, hardworking middle-class folks, all striving and struggling to make the world a better place. And that's exactly what we're going to do here in this next segment, friends. Shauna, I'd like to start with you. You know, one of the questions I'm wondering right up front here is, let me just ask you, do you think that Donald Trump colluded with Russia?
I think someone key on his team absolutely did. The question is going to become, how much did they know? Did they know it was, how much did he know about what they were doing? And what's interesting about collusion is intent isn't necessarily required. He doesn't have to know that it was collusion or know that it was wrong for it to be illegal. Sometimes that's not the case with other crime.
Right.
But even if it is not him personally, which we don't know yet, so we don't want to speculate, the fact is that key members of his team, it looks like based on the evidence that comes out, did do so. And so is it a case where a key candidate that became president was a tool or a pawn in something that was extremely dangerous and extremely reckless, or is the person in the Oval Office part of that reckless behavior? And frankly, neither option is very good.
Interesting. Well, I want to go to George McClellan, and George, ask you, you know, I'm not asked you this question before, but by golly, I'm wondering what you think. Do you think Donald Trump will potentially fire Robert Mueller? Or do you think he's in it till the end?
Robert. He don't need to fire Robert Mueller. This program is collapsing. That investigation is collapsing on its own. Collusion is not a crime until it comes to conspiracy to commit a crime. So they have a definition there. They keep throwing collusion out there. They never use it against Hillary, for example. And look what's starting to go for her program. No, I think this thing will see its course. And the reason why he won't fire him, the main reason is, if he continues the way he's going now, he's going to and has probably already vindicated Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think that Shauna is quite seeing it that way as vindication at this point, but there are some who believe that. And this is where the conversation really gets challenging, where there are both sides of this thing. Shauna, before I go to Ava, I want to circle back with you a moment and ask you about back to more of this collusion stuff with Trump. You know, there was a lot of conversation, a lot of the scandals, too, that are happening now that have been. It's kind of funny with the news days how we get on. You know, I find the media, they seem to do one news story and they beat it to death, Shauna. And then they turn to the next one. And
that's
so
true.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. And they don't multitask well, I'll tell you, which is what we're doing here. But listen, when you take a look at Hillary Clinton and back to Donald Trump, and you talk about two polarizing figures that ran for president, clearly very, very polarizing. And I think I wonder sometimes if Hillary Clinton had become president, if she was in there, how many scandals would we have in play there? I mean, you've got Uranium One, the Clinton emails. We have the Russian dossier there. We have the Russian collusion on both sides, the surveillance unmasking, the leaks. You've got now, with everybody combined, you've got the social media, Russia buying all this phony social media and trying to piss everybody off around the country. I mean, it's become a bit of a spectacle, I think, this whole last election cycle, Shauna, don't you think?
Well, it's not just this last election cycle. We're seeing it continue in Congress, and it doesn't get as much media traction. But whenever a politician or a legislator, let's refer to them that way, because once they're in office, they're supposed to be legislating on our behalf, right? Once they get in office and they find their backs against the wall, then a scandal is created as a divergent, as a diversion. And as you say, it's extremely effective. They say, look, squirrel, and the media runs after it, right? So you'll see, Paul Ryan is feuding with Mitch McConnell. May or may not be true, but it works because now we're not talking about the fact that this bill was stalled in budget committee.
That is a perfect thing to put out there, man. You are so right. We call that, right, the diversion. I mean, that's the that's what's happening all the time, right? It's one diversion after the next. And you're right. Why are they chasing so many squirrels is what I can't understand. And why can't people get up over top of this? Let's go to Ava. And Ava, you know, I like this point that Shauna just makes about watching the squirrels run, because that's kind of how I see the media today. And it doesn't, we don't even know, like most of the stuff is probably not even true, but it's like it's become the nighttime soap opera, you know, and like show after show, news program after news program. It all seems to me like media has a heavy hand
here. There are times when I turn on the news and I watch it for like 10, 15 minutes, and then I have to turn it off because it repeats again and again and again, and I feel like I'm getting dementia if I just sit there and watch it. A lot of stuff that's said on the news, it hasn't even been collaborated or isn't even rooted in fact.
Exactly.
So I have to be very cautious as to what kind of research that I do to even talk on America Out Loud,
right,
because I want to be sure that I'm at least coming up with some sort of analysis that might be close.
Ava, at least you're being respectful and sincere about it, but you bring up a point of what Sean is saying. She's saying the same thing, clearly, that, you know, this is what the media is doing, and there's so much out there that you really don't know what is true or what is untrue. George, you've been talking about the media for a while. You read a lot of your columns, and man, you go after them like you go after their juggler, man. I mean, but you've kind of seen that with the media in all your years in watching this stuff fall down. And what do you see with the media now, George, in compare and contrast that to what you've seen over the last 20 years? I mean, is this a new ground we're seeing right now that we're exploring?
Yes, because Trump does not respond to their attacks. Any other politician would have collapsed under the withering attacks that the media has placed against him, but he doesn't. He attacks back. He's a fighter, and he uses twit to do it.
Mm-hmm. But I wanted to circle back just quickly about the Mueller. I don't think he can continue as special prosecutor. At some point, I think Robert Mueller is going to have to recuse himself, because when the Uranium One scandal and the Clinton emails and the surveillance and unmasking and the leaks, those kinds of things, I think he's going to have to recuse himself, because during some of that time frame, he was he was ahead of the FBI, and it's going to be very difficult for him to be a special prosecutor. So I think a new special prosecutor will be appointed at some point, and I think the person that will be losing their position is Jeff Sessions.
Now that, and I want to get back to Jeff Sessions in just a moment, but that is interesting. Go ahead, George.
That completely. I agree with her completely on that. That's a good assessment, as good as I've heard. Yeah.
So you think he's going to be replaced at some point, George?
At some point, but not he's not going to be replaced with prejudice. He's just going to have to choose his options.
Shauna, do you
stay in there as a Democratic operative to get rid of Trump, which is what the object of this whole
Stop there. I want to shine a light on that just a moment. What is the objective of this special counsel? Tell me, please. Is it? And let me. I want to pose that question back to Shauna because I think I know what it is. But from what I see in the circles, Shauna, it is to from what I'm seeing, it's to remove Trump as president. Is there truth to that, or do you see something else?
It is true that that could be the result of the investigation, but it's not the intent of the investigation. And Mueller is a Republican. He's been a conservative for years, as was Comey. So this isn't something where it's a political witch hunt. This is something where there's a vast array of things that could have happened, and some of which we are seeing have happened. That's why there are arrests that have been made. Now, the excitement and the, you know, kind of sexy conversation is, does it go all the way to the top? Is this a Watergate thing? And I totally get that. But let's pretend that it doesn't for a second, and we don't know, right? And it's only Manafort, or it's only this, you know, situation with the Georgia voting machines or whatever. What the Democrats need to do is say, if this is the case, what is our solution? Where is our commission to improve the security of voting machines? What are we going to do to change election laws to prevent this from happening again? And that's why I think it sounds so partisan, because going back to your earlier point, people are pointing out problems and things that have happened to score political points and not saying, here's what we're going to do about it to heal the nation.
Well, I don't.
They're taking a very real issue and making it a partisan tool.
Well, but that's politics as normal, Shauna, from what I see. I mean, I don't see anybody here. I don't hear the words that you just said, heal in the nation. I haven't heard those words in a really long time, like a really long time.
isn't that the problem?
It is the problem, Shauna. That's exactly it. George, shine a light back on that for me.
If you're a constitutional American and believe in the Constitution, yes, that's true. But we have two competing ideas here. We have domestic communism versus our constitutional republicanism. What's going to prevail? They've worked 40 or 50 years now to tear down and reduce and remove all of our values, our moral standards, our codes, our religion, our education. Everything is directed towards socializing America and not keeping itself in independent the way it's been for years.
George, Shauna has a question there. Who is the they, she's asking?
Oh, well, it started, as I reported in one of my essays I wrote, I think it started in earnest with the Great Society of LBJ that introduced concepts that were actually not constitutional.
Okay, I just want to focus on the broader point that I was trying to make, which is that they are socializing and they are doing to this country, and this goes back to LBJ. When we use pronouns like that to describe all Democrats, whether they be Democrats in office or Democrats that are our neighbors, it's harmful discussion, because what it does is it invalidates any of their viewpoints, right? And and so I see that you have, you know, different points that we can discuss, absolutely. But what I think has to be the ground rule of that, and I don't mean in this conversation, I mean us as a nation. So I'm not
exactly.
No,
we know what you mean.
Right. Like, we as a nation, I don't want to come on this call and say, stupid Republicans, how could they blah, 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 right? Because if I do, I'm not just insulting Republicans. I'm insulting women who might be Democrats and their husbands are Republicans. I'm as feminist as they come. My daddy's a Republican. It would offend me, right? And so I think, like, talking about this in a way as if you were talking to your brother or sister and with that love in the conversation would help all of this. And I'm not talking about just us. I'm talking
You're talking as a nation as a whole, the bigger conversation. And that really is the problem and what we're trying to do at Viewpoint this Sunday and sort of get over. That's why, Shauna, what you just said is what I want to get back to, is really talking not over each other, but with each other in a real conversation, dialogue, problem solving, really looking at the issues and understanding what they are. You know what we forget all too often? You just were headed that way just a moment ago, is we forgot that we are Americans, that people, and the only time we seem to realize that in this country is when, things happen, some major catastrophe has happened in the country. It seems to be the only time we can recall and wear the same ball cap. Other than that, George, I think we're at each other's throats all too often in this country. What do you think?
Well, yeah, of course we are. And the majority of Americans just wanted to grow their families, have a job, pay the bill, and get the kids to college.
Amen to that.
And all of those values have been taken from us.
Yeah, I think we need to sit and talk about these things and do it with civil discourse. Mm-hmm. And it's a lost art. It definitely is.
And it's hurting the country.
It is hurting the country a lot. And I wanted to, I know George has a legal background. I wanted to just toss one more question out to him about this dossier. Was the dossier utilized to get the FISA warrant to eavesdrop on Trump and all the people connected to Trump?
Yes, I think it was. And that was Director Comey's job.
Okay.
And it was on the basis of a counterintelligence investigation, not a criminal investigation.
I have had different sources that have confirmed for me that they do not believe that it was used. However, here's what I'll say. How much do we believe them? And doesn't it illustrate where we are right now that the three of us sitting on the call, who I would imagine would disagree with a lot, sure, but we can easily come together on the fact that we do not trust various people in charge of our own government that is supposed to be working for us.
Right? Yeah.
We might be different parts, but we certainly could agree on that.
That is exactly where we are at.
We agree.
Yeah. That's exactly where we're at. And we're seeing a lot of reports like that now where, quite frankly and sadly, Americans have started to turn it off. They no longer are engaged. They no longer really trust anybody with any connection to government. And a lot of them, sadly, bury their heads in sometimes shame, sometimes embarrassment for their country, but always in disbelief, I am finding. And that disbelief is what is very unsettling to me, to Malcolm, and what I see. Because I don't think, again, I've said this before to you, friends, I'm going to say it here again today to you, that the biggest problem for America is not our enemies abroad and those who try to do harm to this country. I tell you, it is not, no matter who they are. The biggest harm to America are those who are within America. And that's where the harm lies. It's right here in the homeland. And you have to remember that as you take on your day and you take on your viewpoint of whatever it's going to be. Listen, I think we end it there and we say that we can come together to agree that it is time for bigger changes. It is time for like-minded Americans to come together to try to bring some real salvation to this country. Because if we continue to claw at each other, I'm telling you, my friends, this is going to get this is not going to be a pretty picture in the years ahead. And sadly, it's the power that these people seek. I'm telling you, it's really, really sad. You know, friends, there's a lot of news out there, and that's why you're seeing a lot of what we're talking about right now. There's a rise of alternative news networks. It's become very, very apparent out there and very, very prominent in the nation. One such news network is indeed America Out Loud. Viewpoint This Sunday will always deliver an honest analysis and opinions on all sides of the political aisle. You know, we never discriminate against an opinion. The main thing is we are always in search of the out loud truth.